Hello, and welcome to the first episode of the Luke Cage Podcast. We are talking about Season 2, Episode 1, Soul Brother Number 1. We are here today with Miss Jacqueline Coley.
So glad to be back.
We're glad to have you back. And also back is Mr. Euro Garrett.
Good honey. We all back. It's awesome.
I think we're going to bring the sponsorships back. So this episode is brought to you by Ting. Ting soda is made from 100% Jamaican grapefruit with no preservatives. Find it at your local bodega, a corner store, place where they serve rice and peas or oxtails. That's the place you go get it. Episode one was written by Chael Hodari-Coker, who you know from Notorious. He worked on Ray Donovan, Southland. Also, back in the day, he's a very notable hip hop writer from The Source and other magazines. And this episode was also
Gives me hope. Yeah. One day.
Yeah, see, you too can move up the food chain. This episode was also directed by Miss Lucy Liu. So go on. I think she also has directed a couple episodes or some episodes of Elementary, the show that she's on CBS. Could be wrong.
Definitely. Her, like, I think that's the way a lot of these actresses are on shows. Tracy Ellis Ross is the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what was another show? There's a couple other shows like that where they start letting the, Clark Johnson, who used to be on Homicide, directed the first and last episodes of The Shield, and has kind of moved into TV directing as well, but also an actor. The episode title and the song information, episode title is Soul Brother Number 1, which is a song from Pete Rock and CL Smooth's 1992 album, Mecca and the Soul Brother, and a very good album. Check it out if you have not already heard it. Yes, Mecca and the Soul Brother is my favorite Pete Rock and CL Smooth song. The musical guest on this episode is Donald Harrison, the saxophonist, Miss Joy Bryant, and D-Nice from BDP. So let's talk about that cold open. So first, we see Luke's out in the hood. He sees the package. He sees a little package of dope. It's got the Luke Cage brand on it. He's not having any of it. We also see that, you know, so Luke goes to break up the dope spot. And everybody by this point, and I think that's kind of a recurring theme through the whole season, is everybody knows what Luke's deal is. You don't have to explain, and, you know, Luke shows up in the dope spot. The girls are bagging it up. Dudes are running around with the machine guns, and they try to flex on Luke. Luke's like, come on, like, really?
Yeah, at this point, like, who?
Yeah, who doesn't know at this point that he's bulletproof? And it's just like, come on, it's just a waste of time. It's like the old Superman TV shows where they would shoot at Superman, they run out of bullets, and they just throw the gun at him.
Self-awareness, because it's almost like, come on, I know y'all see some Instagram videos.
Y'all should know by now.
Y'all have seen somebody post on Facebook about some dude, you know, who can't get killed with bullets, so you would think.
And they jacked up his African-American College Alliance jersey.
I mean, first of all, I went on the internet right away and I was like, oh, these just came back in 2016 and Luke Cage is already on it.
Yep. I like how Luke was like, hey, hold up before you start shooting. Let me put my Mob Deep on and wrap back on real quick.
He was like, give him some time to put on his wireless headphones.
Yep.
We're going to give you some time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I like how it's just... The whole scene is just by the numbers. It's like, look, I'm here. Okay, if you guys want to shoot at me, just shoot at me. And then, you know how this is going to go. And they're like, yeah, you know, we can't. We got to tell our boss we put up a fight, you know. But clearly, Luke is owning it.
Yeah. That's a real self-aware dialogue. That's a really excellent dialogue to open the scene for the second season, though.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, and it kind of catches you up. It lets you know where Luke is, where his notoriety is, and kind of like what's going on with Luke. So right after that, we get the late Reg E. Casey, who you might know from, if you go way back, you might know him from David Simon. I mean, you might know him from the NBC show Homicide, Life on the Street, or you might know him from The Wire, which he played Mayor Carchetti, one of Mayor Carchetti's top aides in the city government there. You might know him from a whole bunch of different stuff. He was on House of Cards not too long ago as well. He just passed away not too long ago. And apparently this was his last role. Great actor, great voice. Nice seeing him in the show. And when I talked to Chael Coker, the showrunner, last week, he was saying that he says, Mike Coulter, who plays Luke Cage, is the nicest guy in the world. And he says Reg was nicer than Mike. So they sad to see him go.
Man, I mean, I'll forever remember him for The Wire. He had a great role on that, man.
Oh, yeah. The whole everything that happened with all the city government stuff with Mayor Carchetti was excellent, but he was always hilarious, and he kept it interesting, but also funny.
Like, he was the comic relief. He's like, man, I wish I still wrote for the paper so I could write this shit up.
Oh, still greatest show ever on television.
We ever get bored in between shit, we could definitely go down that rabbit hole.
Ooh, for real.
Idea.
We are going to file that under stuff we need to do. Then we get the shot of Luke walking through Harlem. You see the ladies checking him out. You see the corner cats running from him. You see the police dude kind of cleaning up. You see the little kids getting their selfies with him, and kind of, you know, you get to see what's Luke's place in Harlem. The beginning, you kind of get to see how he is with the underworld, where they know exactly what they're getting with him. But now you get to see everybody else in Harlem, and you know he's embracing the role of Harlem's hero. And you get that while Reggie Casey, who we'll talk about who he is a little later in this part, but you get kind of a sense of, you know, how everybody sees him and the sermon, you know, as he's practicing for his sermon, he kind of goes into what people think of him, but also kind of what's going on with Luke and perceptions. And importantly, we also get a quick glimpse of Misty, who is still dealing with losing her arm in the Defenders.
Yep.
And she's really going through it. Next up, we're back at Pop's Barbershop with Bobby Fish and D-Dub. Now, I had to look up D-Dub's name on the credits because I wasn't sure if I had the name. The character's actual name is D.W. Griffin, which is insane.
And then they gave him a nickname on the show.
yeah, they call him D.W. Griffin after the director now I'm going to forget the name of the movie. The Klan movie. Birth of a Nation.
Oh, Birth of a Nation.
The original.
Yeah.
Yeah, D.W. Griffin. But they call him D-Dub. Yeah, I don't think they use his full name anywhere else in the show. But he's in there with his Luke Cage Run DMC shirts and his yellow Luke Cage shirts. And if you look in one of the scenes, there's even a shirt where it says Power Man in it, which was kind of a nice Easter egg, which pops up a couple of times. And then also they mentioned the Luke Cage app was kind of a weird kind of plot device.
Hey, and that was my favorite thing about that. Was the fact that they're like, some white person is making money off of this, as they always do. I was like, they really kept it real, though.
Yeah, because reality is, like, it's almost a mix of, like, how absurd that idea is with the reality that somebody in real life would make an app.
Oh, for real?
To fuck up.
And when
to
once,
fuck up.
And they even tell you how the app works. It's like, you see Luke, you tag him in the thing, so... Kind of go. It goes to the kind of intrusiveness of social media sometimes, but and then we get the touristy guy coming in to try to get some footage of Luke talking about where's the love.
was it the Mobb Deep song right before that they were playing, right?
Yeah, I think it was. Was it
the Fight Scene?
Yeah, I think it was Shook Once. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was also like so cold too. Like I just love that they did Mobb Deep at that moment. I was just like, this is so
and
New York, man.
Ironically, look, this week or last week was the anniversary. Last week was the anniversary of Prodigy's death.
Yeah, yeah, that was wild. Yeah, I think Prodigy's death was like either Friday or Thursday or Friday, something like
that.
It
was a Thursday. It was Thursday.
Yeah.
It was Thursday. Yeah, because yeah, that was the day I went to the press conference for the fight with the MMA fight with Mayweather McGregor. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh wow. Oh yeah. Yeah, I remember. So it's interesting. They still got Pop Shop. They're still Luke's out here still fighting crime. Doesn't look like anybody's getting their hair cut up in there. And meanwhile, Luke's trying to keep the lights on in the place. Let's jump to Misty, who's doing some rehab with Claire. Nice to see Claire still around. I feel like they utilized her a little better this season than they did last season,
yeah.
Where she kind of popped in towards the end of last season. It felt like, and so it was nice seeing her in this season. And nice giving Misty somebody else to kind of connect to in the show since Scarf's gone. And what was interesting about this season also is you have so many characters and you have so many completely fleshed out characters that have their own storylines, but you still have Luke at the center, but you're able to, each of these storylines don't take away from Luke's story. They just kind of add depth, which is kind of nice. Next up, Shades and Comanches reunite, meeting on the street. We haven't seen Comanche since season one when they were in Seagate together beating up on Luke on a daily basis like it was a hobby. And you get a little more backstory on Comanche this season where, you know, you find out he was in the same gang as Shades, the Rivals, which is the same gang Homeboy was in season one. They were all under that dude Romeo and the other dude. You get a little more backstory, and as the season goes on, you get a lot more backstory. So far, how did you guys feel about, like, just the first maybe 15, 20 minutes of the episode? Did you feel like, what was the vibe you were getting from the show?
Definitely a vibe that, I guess, the whole idea that, you know, now, I think what they did was a really good job of holding the fact that he's, like, a local celebrity.
Yeah, for sure.
And how that, you know, like I said, back to what you said about the truth of this and all that stuff. I think that was the whole, you know, I think it did a good job of displaying, like, oh, people are really probably just bothering. Like, because, I think, how can I say it? There's, like, an idea of, like, you know, the obvious, you know, typical masculine idea. And because, you know, he just walks, just walks around being himself. I think he did a good job of showing, like, the idea that he really doesn't get how big of a person he is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's still dealing with a little. What about you, Jacqueline? Did you feel it was just the beginning parts? You feel like you were getting into something different? You feel it was the same?
For me, honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. The thing I took most from the first 15 minutes was that before the credits even rolled, when they were like previously on Luke Cage, I was like, it was so nice to go back to like last season and to have that like refresher right before we went into the season. Like that was probably one of the best, like, this is what went down that I've seen on any of the Netflix shows. Like it was tight, it was together, and it like really made me be like, oh, we back. I'm not going to lie to you. That was like, there was so many great moments in the first 15 minutes. I don't want to gloss over them, but like, I needed that because it's been a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been. I mean, it's Netflix. It's, you know, it's like waiting for, you know, seasons that were like a HBO show. You gotta wait more than a minute for it. So yeah, that's super helpful. Next up, we go to Guinea's Paradise Supper Club with Mariah and Shades. Comanche's kind of in the back. We learned that Mariah and Shades are dating. Good for them. Didn't see that coming.
Listen, you
and
are not going to gloss over that right there. Listen.
No, no. You know, dive into it, because go ahead. Go ahead. Let's talk about Mr. Theo Rossi and Mr. Alfie Woodard.
Hey, Alfie's still she's still a baddie.
Yeah. Yeah,
she's
go Alfie. I don't know how old she is. I don't care how old she is. She looks great.
Yeah.
Whatever the age is. And they make a convincing couple too.
Yeah. And they just nasty with it too.
Oh yeah.
I know, but they just nasty with it too.
I love the fact that they cast, like, season one was of a slight variation on maybe the way that you've seen Alfre Woodard in other movies. Season two is, I don't think I've ever seen Alfre Woodard in no kind of role like this ever before.
Yeah, I'm me neither.
Like, yo.
No, but you know what, though? I do like how she keeps drinking, because it reminds me of the Alfre Woodard from Primal Fear. She was the drunk judge.
Yeah, I was like, as long as we don't get to Holiday Heart levels, I think we're good. Yeah.
I'm used to, like, Grand Canyon Alfre Woodard, like, you know. they're not messing around. There's a lot of little, you know, a lot of PDA, a lot of flirting, a lot of. Yeah, they go there more than a couple of times.
Yeah.
Also, we get to meet.
That's that couple that you hang out with, and you like, y'all ever not fuck? Like, that's the thing with that. Like, are y'all ever not fucking with? Like, this is the only time where you can't physically, and y'all look like you're itching to. I know y'all been around that couple, and you know what I'm talking about.
This is the couple that you're like, where like one of them gets up to go to the bathroom, and then the other one gets up to go to the bathroom like 2 minutes later, and you're like, they're fucking. Damn it. Like, you're at a restaurant and you're like, they've been in there for like 20 minutes. They are the parents from Boomerang. That's who they are. They're the parents from Boomerang. Yeah, because, you were right. That is a real couple. And we've definitely all met that couple before. And I want to jump to real quick to one of the newer characters, Mr. Piranha Jones, who I would have watched another show with just Piranha Jones. It's 30-minute sitcom, Piranha Jones. Hood PR dude. He was hilarious. Also, we kind of get a little inkling that Mariah is still trying to go legit, and Shade seems completely in her corner, and he wants her to go legit as well.
Honestly, though, that's the one part that I would say I had a little bit of fallacy with, because that's not where they left off. I think they realized that they kind of left the season in a weird place with Mariah. And so they tried to, like, backtrack it, because at the end of the last season, she was like, I'm about to be a king sitting on my throne, and then now like, jump to, like, now I'm trying to, like, you know, give up the game. And it's kind of one of those weird moments where, like, obviously they wrote themselves in a corner, and they're just trying to get themselves out, but it's still one of those things where I'm like, y'all could have done a little bit better than that. Like, y'all took the easy way out.
Well, I think you're right, is that they still had to right around season one, and especially the last, probably the last two episodes of season one kind of boxed them in a couple of different places, you know, especially because we haven't seen them in one entire show, because Defenders has already happened while this is, you know, in between these two shows. So we really don't know what's going on, and they kind of catch you up. But yeah, they definitely turned her back into what, first quarter season, Luke Cage, you know, season one.
Yep. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to still get away from my name. I'm like, girl, we've been past that. You hit Cottonmouth over the head with a mic stand. Like, girl, we done.
Yeah, it's like Carlito's way where Carlito tells Sean Penn's character, he's like, hey, you can't be, he's like, once you kill Cesario, whatever the dude's name is, once you kill that dude, you're a gangster now. You can't be a lawyer and then a gangster, keep going back and forth. You're either all the way in or you're not in at all.
Oh, what was the line since we talked about The Wire? Be like, man, you look like a man without a country. Too hard, too soft for this life, and maybe not hard or smart enough for the other one. That's she's some Stringer Bell shit right now. That's what she is. We saw what happened to Stringer.
Yeah, Stringer thought he was built for it. He was not quite built for it.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be Machiavelli. Meanwhile, Mariah's over here sucking on Shades' thumb at the restaurant.
And
I'm just going to throw this out. I don't want to jump into it too much, but there were so many looks from Comanche that I did not understand. And I was like, what is wrong? Why is he so salty? What is up with this dude? We were going to talk about that later. But I'm watching the episode again, and I'm like, oh, yeah, like, what was his deal? And at first it was annoying because I didn't know what was going on. But anyway, We'll get back to that later.
We figure out later.
Way later.
Both ways that goes.
yes. Look at you, puns. One thing that was cool is that we got is Piranha Jones is another character from the comic who's Raymond Jones. I do like the fact that, you know, most of Luke Cage's Rogues Gallery are some 70s coonery. So it was nice that they turned all of these characters into, like, real people who make sense for this universe, not just, you know. And they did it, I think, a lot in a better way than, you know, I know Marvel was kind of probably worried about, hey, how are we going to do the Mandarin? All right, let's just not make the Mandarin a thing. We'll do the Ten Rings, and then later we'll do the Ben Kingsley thing. You know, I know they had a tap dance around that, or the Ancient One, or something like that.
They did that one real well. Like, I would say that was the most problematic character that existed, and they had that was a deft touch.
And made him a hero, too.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. Villain and a hero. Villain and a hero. Yeah. Like, I would say that, you know, M'Baku is like right up there with the Ancient One on problematic elements, and so that's why I don't give that writer of Doctor Strange that much credit. We'd be like, we tried to fix it. I'm like, well, try didn't get you there, motherfucker.
But I think with the Ancient One, they messed up in the casting. I don't think they took the, you know, Confucius kind of fake Confucius bullshit out, but they think it was in the casting where they were like, let's try to do something different.
But that was like,
I think they should have
solved. That was part of the song. Yeah. Like, that was written in that way for it to be a woman, and specifically they were going to cast, you know, big name. Like, you know, whatever. Either way, it ain't work.
Next, we get some Miss, you know, Claire and Luke on a date. So we see they're still going strong. Meanwhile, Misty, we see, and I like that they keep jumping back into Misty's story, and her story isn't about Luke. It's her own story.
Yeah,
I like, you know, Misty's out there drinking at her house, looking at her Purple Heart. Listen to reggae. I think she was like listening to like Gregory Isaacs or something.
Yeah, you know, crazy. Like that. I saw that scene. I thought she was gonna light one. I was like, oh, she about to. Like, she about to. Oh shit!
I mean, let's be honest.
You've seen that scene in a lot of other movies.
You know she did. They didn't put it in it because it's probably a Netflix show. Honestly, the realest thing was her doing her hair and, like, that struggle. Because black woman's hair is fucking problematic and difficult with both hands on the best of days. So her doing her hair with that sigh, I was like, that's some real shit right there. Black person wrote that for show.
Yeah.
Without question.
Also, I didn't remember seeing Luke Cage's backside until right now. So just
A woman directed it, and there are so many touches of the thirst, the Lucy Liu thirst.
Oh yeah. That shit was intense.
There was an intense female gaze working there.
Oh, there was, and I was so here for it in every inch of it. Listen. I'm like I said, y'all can't talk about these things, and maybe I shouldn't either, but here we is.
Speak on it. One other thing that's interesting about that montage is when it's Luke, you know, it's the Luke and Claire, and then it's Shades of Comanche and Misty. The song is called Night Nurse, which is kind of funny. It's just kind of a nod to Claire's character, which was kind of cool.
It still hasn't really come out yet, and may not. Did you hear this? How Rosario talking about she don't know where she's gonna end up.
Yeah. They worked her, and she's a mom too. So she works a lot. She does a lot of social work. She does a lot of film work. She does TV work. You know, she got her regular home life. I mean, not that other actors don't do it. It's totally a thing, but they use her in every single series. And it's not like they just use her as a cameo now. Like, she's in half of Iron Fist, two thirds of Daredevil, not so much season two, if I remember correctly, but she's in a big chunk of season one, you know, and she's in a big chunk of this. And she was in a, you know, small part of, she's in obviously through Defenders. Like, she gets as much screen time as anybody else in these shows.
Yeah, she probably is the most known character out of the
Look, yeah. I called her when I interviewed her. I was like, what's up? You're the Nick Fury of TV shows. Like, get it, girl.
Yeah. Yeah, secure the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to see her go, but, you know, I could understand if she did.
Yeah.
So next thing we get Sugar. We get a glimpse of Sugar, who's back from season one. I thought Sugar had one of the funniest lines in the first scene when they were in the Chinese restaurant, which was, Genghis Khan's. And, you know, after everybody beats on Luke, and Sugar's the last dude, he's like, I don't even like these dudes. And he bounces. Like, he had like one line, and it's super, and you remembered it. The minute you see him here, it's like, oh, this dude from season one.
No,
so it was nice seeing Sugar.
The best thing was Luke coming out and be like, you slimmed up, because he showed it. I didn't even recognize him at first. He said his name was Sugar. I was like, that's that guy right there. Whoa. You do look good. You knew you was coming back. They told you early. Like, we're gonna put you with a bigger part in season two, brother. Get your ass in shape.
he was like, I was on the treadmill all summer.
For real, you could tell he was.
Looking like kind of looking like there's a picture of Big Pun in a suit, and that's what he reminded me of when Big Pun was smaller.
I was like, he ain't that big, but you said he was small. Like,
no, I'm talking about this was Big Pun when he was like 190.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Which is a crazy picture. Yeah, look it up. He's in like a suit. He has like a trench coat. Looking super sharp. Next, we see the Reverend and Luke meet on the street, and we find out that the Reverend, who had been unnamed before, is Luke's dad. And Luke has no nostalgia for dad. You know, we had him talked about all through the last two or three episodes of season one. You know, we already know that he had Diamondback. It was his brother on the side. You know, he was obviously super hard on Luke. He didn't visit Luke in jail. And Luke is just like, yeah, great that you're here, but you weren't here for me in jail, so I'm kind of done. Yeah, you can tell he's been done with him.
Yeah.
And you almost get the impression that his dad is in Harlem, you know, partially on his coattails. I don't know if he's necessarily telling people he's Luke's dad, but he's partially on the coattails because his whole sermon is about Luke Cage, so it's, even though it's
Yeah,
not,
it's real crafty.
I thought that was a point. Yeah, I thought that was a point.
I don't know if they – well, I think if people knew, then maybe he would have been a target at some point, but I think it was more like, oh, okay, I know Luke Cage better than anybody else. Let me go try to do some sermons or, you know, like when you try some hip preacher nonsense.
Because I figured, you know, one of the interesting things is that I guess, you know, the fact is, you know, first season, the church, you know, that they grew up in is kind of disarray anyway, so –
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm like, you know, it's an interesting idea. I just looked at it as, you know, Luke Cage just hopping on the web.
Yeah.
The folks been showing him, you know, been showing him videos and stuff on YouTube and stuff. And he's like, maybe there's an opportunity.
Yeah, especially because we know he was in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So it's like he all of a sudden just pops up in in Harlem? Yeah, come on. Next up we're with Mariah, and Mariah's training hostesses for some reason. We don't really get the sense that Mariah's gone back to politics in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You know, she just seems to be running the club and pretty content with that. Also, you get a shot, and they mention it several times, and it actually becomes part of the plot. The Basquiat that's on the wall. I remember them talking about it later, but I don't think I noticed it the first time it was in there. But, you know, Mariah's
and
doing
he
her
was
training.
Right. What's that damn painting? What the fuck is wrong with her? Like, I got more frustrated the more he said that. I was like, it's a painting. Like,
Shades
did. Trying to do what you're trying to do.
Shades didn't lie at all. No lies.
Like, I hate to say it, but, like, I don't know. I'm not going to lie to you. Shades seems to be, like, the good one, making the right, clear decisions, and Mariah is on her own little thing. And, yeah, I'm like, all right, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I get it, you know. Art doesn't depreciate, you know. Art always increases value, and she wants to hold on to it because legacy. I feel
Look,
it.
You can't hold a Virginia ham under your arm and be bitching about no bread. You got to make a choice.
Hey, like the documentary we were talking about earlier today, I believe it was the notorious Big Meech Flonnoy who said, "You can't take none of this with you when you're gone, so we're going to spend it now."
Oh, for real.
You can't.
And for all the hooping and hollering about, I'm trying to move past it, you literally got the key right there.
And then she got a picture of her mom in the room. But my favorite line of that scene is she looks at her mom while she's pouring her Belvedere and says, "I'm still better than you."
Mm-hmm. No, my favorite thing with Mariah is, like, she's that person you always go to. She's like, "You holding on to old shit in every way, shape, or form." Mm-hmm. Physical, mental, you always be holding on to old shit. Like, you know that friend of yours, you always have to be like, "Why are you always bringing up old shit?" Like, that's Mariah. She's that friend. That's why they call it Shady Mariah.
Yeah, she's you know, we're used to seeing characters in film and TV where it's the male character, and the male character has some kind of father issue, whether it's Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader, or it's whomever. There's mm-hmm. always father issues. We don't get, unless it's like like August Osage County, which is really rough drama where their characters mm-hmm. definitely have an issue with the mother figure. You don't get a lot of that, but this is like Mariah's having mom issues through the entire thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of definitely different to see. But yeah, she probably could have done well to listen to some folks' advice around her.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we get a brief shot of Bushmaster in a. Who appears to be wearing the Obama tan suit, playing Harlem from Brooklyn.
good in it. He's that one that he's got that Thanos thirst that you don't want to have, but it's real. I'm just saying. Oh, I told y'all I was going to tell
the other day,
it on
I was
this
like,
episode.
Oh, you spilling all your stuff. I was telling my wife the other day, I was like, "You know, there's people out there who think Thanos is hot." She was like, "Wait, what?" I was like, it's a thing.
So I'm not in the huge Thanos thirst like category. I'm not, but I will say this about Bushman. Like you should not like that dude. He's murderous and not cool. But he hits him with those light eyes, and I'm like, talking one again.
He is the the Killmonger of the MC of the Marvel Netflix series. Easy.
Mm-hmm.
once you get partway through the story, you're like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
You know, I like the retro picture of the the gang, the rival gangs, and anyway, so you get a little bit of the backstory about, you know, kind of the gang scene and where the rivals and the Diablos and kind of where Shade the Comanche fit in and where this other guy, Arturo Rey, King Arthur, fits in. Not a super important plot line because it gets resolved in about 30 seconds after that.
For real. I think they
made it seem like it was a
new
big
characters. It was just new characters. Again, like, I love them, but I can see through the writing of some of it.
This was like, we need to get Comanche, and no, we need to get Shades in a situation.
Yes, exactly.
Right after that, back at Harlem's Paradise, we get Mariah and Shades, and we meet Mr. Dontrell Cockroach Hamilton, and we see the performance by Joy, another character from the comics, who they cleaned up for the screen. And I believe he's played by Mr. Dorian Missick, who is Simone Missick's husband. Also an actor and a DJ,
like,
I believe,
to work
right?
Together. Yeah, they like to work together. Let me tell you, it seems like every movie he's in, he finds a way to put her in it, and the vice versa.
Good for them. Good for them.
I like that, though. Yeah.
And they can both act. He's good, and you can tell they work together in a kind of, in an adversarial way here, but they work together well.
Yeah.
Next, you find the gangs, you know, the gangs are kind of making a play for, you know, they're, Mariah's trying to sell this business. Shades wants her to sell him the club, so at least she's completely out of anything shady. And, you know, Shades, like, you could tell Shades has had a change of heart. He's like, look, Mariah says we should get out of this business. I'm all about it. Let's figure out how we can do it. And Mariah's like, yeah, I want to get out of this business, but, you know, it's nice to be the king and the queen, and which is all bad.
Yeah.
Then we get Sugar setting up Luke, mentioning Sue's rendezvous briefly, which the New York people will know about that spot.
How stupid is that of Sugar? I'm like, Sugar, you trying to make it past episode one, brother? Why are you doing this?
You know what? And what's weird is Luke, I don't think Luke ever calls on it later in the
nope.
season, like at all. Not 1 second. I kept thinking, like, did Luke forget about it, or did Luke figure they were even because he keyed his car? Like, that was one where I thought it was a little weird that nobody mentioned it.
Exactly.
So next up, there's a scene briefly where Claire refers to Cage as Power Man. There's a couple
mm-hmm.
mentions of
yeah, that was funny.
The name Power Man across there, which were all kind of cool. And then Misty runs into Cockroach Hamilton. That was actually a cool scene where Misty and Cockroach meet on the street, because you get kind of some backstory with her and Scarf. You find out Cockroach is out because, not unlike the L.A. Rampart scandal in L.A., once the ramp with David Mack and Rafael Perez got busted, a lot of their cases got thrown out, like a bunch. So this was kind of the same thing. Like, L.A., we're kind of hip to that one. So a lot of these cases, valid or not, you know, it's just like, hey, let's just kind of get a lot of these cases out of here, and we don't want to deal with the lawsuits. Just let them go.
Fruit
so,
from the poison
so cockroach
trees,
is out.
They say. Yeah.
Well, most importantly, she just dropped her groceries and left.
I'm serious.
She was like, yo. Meanwhile, that's the interaction between them reminded me of the interaction between Jennifer Lopez and Isaiah Washington in Out of Sight, where there's a real super creepy undertone where he's like, if this was nighttime, those two would be squabbling in a bad way. Because he's eyeballing her like, you like to tussle? And I'm like, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
She still would have whooped his ass off.
I think so.
We get a couple of these across the season, but another discussion with Mariah and Shades talking about going straight or staying in. And Shades is really trying to steer them out of that ditch. So that's kind of a thing. So they have the scene that was kind of released before the season came out where King Arthur tries to blow Luke up and, you know, be set up from Sugar, and DW shows up to film him. I think really that whole scene's there just to show that the Judas gun no longer works on Luke.
Yeah.
So we find that, because I was at first, I was like, wait, why is this scene here? And I was like, oh, to show that Luke's getting stronger and his skin's, I guess, getting thicker. One thing that I don't think I need to see again is Luke dabbing on anybody.
Yeah. No.
That was
the
weakest dab.
Sorry, Mike.
Too.
Sorry, Mike.
Yeah.
Son likes to dab 100 times a day, I think, if he could. So I'm already dabbed out. I just didn't think it fit.
Look at Migos influencing even Luke Cage.
Oh, wait, was it Migos or was it Neo?
It was Migos. Yeah, it was.
It was?
Yeah, look at my dad. Look at my dad.
I could have sworn I saw a Migo at the airport when I was coming back from Chicago. I was like, is that a Migo? But I honestly, I can't tell those three dudes apart. So I'm like, is it? I'm like, this dude was
my
wearing like flip flops and
like,
a Supreme hoodie.
More than one. She's like, yes, that's why it's called Migos, not Migos. Straight up didn't know. I was like,
they're like, what?
Even the title of the name is fucking plural.
Oh man, the SNL one what they did with Donald Glover, Friendos, was hilarious.
Oh yeah.
Shout out to Stephen Larson. So next up, we get back to the Misty story, and Misty visits the precinct and talks to Captain Redenhauer, which is Chuck D's last name. So I'm curious. I should have asked. I'm curious if that was a shout out to Chuck, but who knows? And clearly,
Cleo wrote it, so I'd say yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He did write this one. Yeah. One thing we get real loud and clear is, ain't nobody checking for Misty coming back to work.
Hey, seriously.
They figured you got your arm chopped off. You don't need to be here. And B, you can tell it clearly creeps everybody out. Like nobody knows how to feel around her or how they should look at her or take her. And it's clearly uncomfortable for them.
You could tell they took research because that's like one of the companies I worked for was a prosthetics company, and that's real. Prosthetic amputees are very well aware of their situation. Other people that have problems with it.
Yeah. And I kind of glossed over it. Luke shows up at Harlem's Paradise, and people over are still pointing guns at Luke. I mean, Shades doesn't bother with it, but you see that Cockroach does, and so does Comanche. And you also see that when Comanche walks up on Luke, Luke taps him on the head and Comanche knocks out. That's going to be important a couple episodes later. We see that Luke doesn't necessarily need to run around beating people up. Obviously, he's got a secret move there.
Yeah, it's interesting that is because it's like, even though Luke is getting stronger, Mariah seems to be, I guess, still one step ahead of him. That's pretty interesting.
So anyway, so next up we have Luke and Claire having an argument. Claire showed up at the club. Luke's trying to figure out what she's doing there. Claire wants to help. Claire wants to be part of the team. And, you know, Luke's not trying to have it. Luke's not trying to, you know, he already lost his wife. He's trying to protect people. He's not trying to have Claire be any part of any of that.
And she has a role, which is to heal people who have extraordinary powers. Just heal folks. It's a safe job.
Meanwhile, as this is kind of going on, you know, after their argument and, you know, after Misty going back to the precinct and trying to get her job back, we get what is probably one of the most fun parts of the episode. And Jacqueline, you were talking about this earlier. Bushmaster's Patois Party and Capoeira Showdown.
That's actually was insane. That's like the highlight of the episode.
What one? Can we say it again?
Yep. Yep.
That is definitely the highlight. Like, yo, there was something really lit as fuck when he stabbed dude in the eye and it slid his knife to the other socket. Yeah, that's a good level of gore. Yeah.
That's gangster right there.
Yeah.
We weren't used to seeing, you know. Also you get an idea of what Bushmaster's story is, because he keeps talking about the Stokes, and it's not casual. Like he don't care which Stokes it is, he is not messing with no kind of Stokes, and he's not here for any of your nonsense. And we spent this whole episode also seeing Luke Cage being invulnerable, getting stronger, not taking the Judas bullet. We were seeing Luke's like on top of it. He's got kind of Harlem in check. People are running from him. And, you know, so we already know that he's kind of probably due for kind of a fall at some point. Meanwhile, you get an idea of like really what Bushmaster is working with over here. He's ruthless. He's not here for your nonsense. And like I said, like Killmonger, he's definitely got some stuff going on. You know, there's more to his story. Also, and then at the end, we get the Luke taking it to Mariah, like letting her know, like, hey, you know, you're not gonna be caught mouth too up in here. Like, I'm not here for none of that. So that's season two, episode one. Jacqueline, what did you think about this?
I mean, I thought it was a good, like, back into the series, like, again, after the time off, I loved it. There was some great moments to it, but I'm not going to lie to you. I enjoyed Luke Cage season one, but it had a dip. There was a clear dip for me in it. It was one of those ones where I was like, y'all need to cut off about 4 or 5 episodes. And I was glad that this first episode felt really tight. Like, I mean, I hate to say it, but you could just tell a showrunner wrote it because it had to set up what it needed to set up. Not to get into later episodes, but there's a lot of threads. Like, if you go back and look at this episode and then go look at, like, what they're dealing with in episode 7, so many things they pulled from were set up here. So I really, for everything they had to get done in this episode, I really applaud, like, how much happened. There's so much exposition. There's so much setup, but it still managed to be entertaining, mostly because of Bushman, let's be honest.
And also, they handled exposition well, because none of that exposition felt like exposition. Like, I have bad exposition is, like, my pet peeve. I hate it. And none of this just felt like there was a lot of show don't tell, but a lot of it was relaying information in very organic ways, as opposed to, oh, hi, I'm Jimmy. Guess what? These two guys killed each other 10 years ago, and that's why you should check for me in 2 episodes. Like, there's, like, none of that. It's you know when the walking plot device walks up and just has way too much to say? Like, they brought all of it out in conversations that felt organic, which was nice. And I still think that with season, and, you know, you kind of talked about the episodes feeling like the seasons feeling like they go too long, like, especially like Daredevil season 2, where it was like, hey, we went through the Punisher. We burned through the Punisher in like 6 episodes. I guess we got to do Electra in the Hand for another 6. And it almost felt like 2 seasons. The seasons always, not always, but often feel a little too long. This one, I felt like they were like, hey, let's take every note from that we got from season 1 and tighten it up, fix it.
Yeah.
Amplify it, do whatever we need to do.
Yeah. Down for
definitely not a 4.5 season. I'm just going to put that out there right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't talk about your former folks. That's my new rule going forward on this podcast. It's like towards the end of the last one. So way too much time talking about former folks. I'm going to try and keep it real on
this
one.
We were working through some stuff last season.
I mean, really.
It got real.
It did.
Mr. Euro Garrett, what do you have to say about episode 1?
I was thinking, you know, how was, Bushmaster going to stack up against, you know, Mahershala's, you know, Cottonmouth and WoW.
Yeah.
WoW, that's a hell of an entrance. That's a hell of an entrance, for sure. I'd say that has to be, probably that scene has to be the best action scene of the Netflix Marvel series since the
doorway scene with Daredevil.
The hallway and Daredevil.
The hallway and Daredevil, That's probably the best. Like, I actually rewinded it back and watched it again after I saw it.
Agreed.
Great, whoever was the choreographer on that, great fucking job.
And what's nice to get back to the setup, like what you were talking about, Jacqueline, is one thing that was a criticism about season 1 was you didn't know, they had like kind of almost 3 villains of that season. You had Cottonmouth, you had Mariah, and you had Diamondback, and they all, Cottonmouth shows up first. Then Mariah comes in, you don't know, you know, she doesn't appear to be the villain, and she's kind of the villain. And then Diamondback comes in, and he's kind of he's been through the whole season as an idea, but, like, really doesn't show up until the tail end. So you don't really feel like there isn't, like, this pent up, like, let's get him. It's just like, hey, that dude that shot you 2 episodes is your brother, and he's going to kill you. Like, it was this thing, they've set it up from the beginning. They've set up Mariah's kind of trajectory from the first episode, and they have set up Bushmaster's trajectory, you know, for the whole season, which is, like you said, showrunner. Showrunner, like, let me do the top and the bottom. You guys figure out the middle and get that solidified for me. I'm going to remind all of the listeners to check out our interview with Chao. It's on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. If you have the Google podcast app, which is I just downloaded the other day, which is pretty nice, nice and streamlined. You can find it on there as well. So check for that. Mr. Yul Garrett, do you have any shout outs? Anybody you want to reach out to?
Oh man, yeah. Shout out to everybody who listens.
That's a good
shout
one.
Shout out to everybody who's listening. We definitely appreciate y'all.
And Jacqueline, any for you?
Yeah, same. Anybody who listens to us ramble on, like, appreciate you, bro. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Brothers and sisters both. Yeah, no, that's it. Just follow me on Twitter at that Jacqueline.
And Mr. Euro Garrett, where can we find you on Twitter?
Euro G, URALG.
And if you've come over from the Atlanta FX podcast, welcome back. If you've come over as a new listener, welcome aboard. Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Smothered Potato. We changed it from last season. Last season was at Atlanta FX PCast. We've changed that now to Smothered Potato, where you can listen to all of our different podcasts because we'll obviously be doing different shows. You can find the podcast, like I said, on iTunes and Google Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever. If you're on iTunes, drop us a review, rate us, do whatever you want. You can find me at Ahmad Childress. That's it. We will catch you later. We'll catch you with another episode. We're also going to have part two of our interview with Chael Coker. And that's it. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Peace.
Dope.